Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 154.
This week on the podcast, it's a Seymour Hersh bombshell. Osama bin Laden is still dead. Carry on.
Hillary Clinton's new media strategy is to pretend there is no media. The New York Times sass attacks her in response.
And the lap band surgery was probably cheaper than Chris Christie's football game concessions.
The Sheldon Adelson solo primary claims another victim, common sense.
Republican candidates hawk their Bible cures for your diabetes and tax woes because pseudoscience.
Somebody finally stood their ground and shot George Zimmerman in the face.
And Texas does the most Texas-y thing ever attempted.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
And I'm Lila. You can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, nothing happened this week that is newsworthy, which means this is going to be one great podcast.
Yeah, it is.
Everything that happened is...
And the one thing that happened that we sort of thought would be like super newsworthy kind of fizzled out like within 24 hours, which is kind of bizarre because it was a huge news story yesterday and then it was sort of like nobody cared today. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah. We're
happy
really...
belated Mother's Day, by the way.
Yeah, happy that belated happened. Mother's Day. Happy belated Mother's Day to our mothers.
That's right. I got to spend it with mine, which was lovely.
Right. I called my mom 4 times on Mother's Day for various reasons.
Oh, not because you couldn't get a hold of her.
No. I talked
you got a hold
to her
of her
4
each
separate
of those 4
times.
Different times.
Well, one of them was a Skype.
Sure.
3 other times I had to call with various updates about my life.
Uh-huh.
And one was because we are going to be crashing the Democratic State Convention this weekend.
This coming weekend.
I literally,
I'm so
when you texted that, I called my mom immediately because I thought she'd be really excited about it, which she was.
Yeah. So. Well, I've got a bunch of ins with the old folks crowd now because my parents are real active in there.
Your mom is like a great PR woman.
Yeah,
My mom is like our biggest fan. Your mom is like our
PR person.
My mom
is a good PR woman. She's never listened to the podcast before. That's a lie. She does. But she doesn't listen every week. Your mom listens every week.
My mom listens every week.
And she's a very active viewer. She will send stories sometimes. Not so much. But my mom loves to give out postcards.
Yes. It's like your mom is like the only
person
giving out
postcards.
And
she and my dad are real active in the Palm Desert Greens Democratic Club, which is the, you know, the place that they live, basically. And they have, I was talking to the guy who is the president of that, whose name is Charlie, I think. Yeah, it's Charlie.
Right,
and he's in his early 80s. Lovely old man.
Right.
Just real sort of like
a serious Democrat.
Snappy guy. Very serious Democrat. Yes. Gave me his card.
Oh.
But he was like, we're going to Anaheim next week for the convention. You should come. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Well, I will do that.
That's happening.
Yeah.
So we're going.
So we're going to go.
We don't know if we can get in, but we're going anyway.
Certainly
going
to try.
Yeah.
We're going to be in and around the convention environs.
Yeah.
Of sorts.
Yeah. And there's like big people there.
Yeah.
Warren's going to be there.
Warren's
she's
giving
the fancy pants.
We're not going to meet Elizabeth Warren.
No.
But we're going to...
Unless we like pose as cater waiters or something. Like we're not going to be able to get to...
Yeah, but we're going to know that we're in the Elizabeth Warren vicinity.
Right. She'll be
We're going to feel better knowing that we're near Elizabeth Warren. We're going to feel smarter and more optimistic.
Yeah, that's right.
So we have that.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris will probably be there because...
Yep.
Nancy Pelosi will be there.
Barney Frank is going to be there.
Oh, Barney.
I looked at the list of everyone.
Barney Frank also is going to be there. Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yeah.
It's not every day you have Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank to hang out with.
No.
Not every day at all.
I wish it was.
So true. Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be exciting, and we will be reporting on that for you
next
week.
That's right.
But this week, we have...
The story that I just referenced. The story that we all thought was going
it's
to be
fizzle.
A story.
It's also our lead story.
I was getting a text message from people yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, our friend Grant,
who's been on the podcast,
was like, Seymour Hersh had a busy weekend. I didn't even know what he was talking about at the time.
Nope. Looked it up immediately.
And I had watched Meet the Press already at that point. I think it actually was published after that.
Yeah, it was published later in the day.
Seymour Hersh, if you don't know who he is, he's sort of one of our, you know, better investigative reporters.
Yeah.
He's been since the Vietnam era. Right, since the Vietnam era.
He unveiled a lot of war crimes that were perpetrated by our own...
By the U.S.,
by our own army. I was going to say our own criminals.
Well,
but
they were.
I guess, and also
the Abu Ghraib story.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he says something, people often listen.
Yeah.
And the latest thing that he has said is that we have lied about basically every single fact that we have told about the Osama bin Laden raid in 2011.
The official narrative of the Osama bin Laden raid
is not one thing that is correct that you know about.
No.
Yeah. So his major argument in the report is that basically that Obama administration officials claimed in the wake of the raid that the U.S. and Pakistani officials were like, you know, that we had not told Pakistan that we were like going in to do this. Like that was the whole thing. That
part
was
sort of
like this
part of the
rogue
story was,
thing that like we had to like go in under the cover of night and the Pakistanis didn't know we were doing it. And we found out where bin Laden was because we'd followed some courier that was like, you know, I mean, there was like this.
Right.
Okay. So basically what Seymour Hirsch says is that that is all wrong.
Yeah. The Pakistani officials not only knew we were coming, but like sort of prepped the perimeter
That ISI agents went with the Navy SEALs to basically show them around the compound.
Yeah.
There was no, and they knew where he was. And so there was not like any, and they supposedly had knowledge of where he was because they were like, and didn't initially share it with us because they wanted it like
as
a bartering tool or something
in their
like that.
Conversations
but then
with
finally
us.
Decided that they were going to tell us, and then so there was supposedly like no firefight. You know, what there was this big story about the Navy SEALs going in, and there was like this huge fight as they
right.
like entered
and
that.
He claims the Pakistani
didn't happen.
Military basically cleared the area so that there would not be a firefight.
Right. And
also, anytime anyone says ISI. I immediately think of a skating organization that's also called ISI, and I'm always like, what is ISI doing there? And then I'm like, no, wait a minute. Everything's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
Digression. Continue.
Right. So,
but in any case, this basically would mean that that there's like a giant conspiracy afoot, that the
right.
entire administration conspired to tell us an incorrect version of the events that made them look more heroic
right.
than what
well,
actually happened.
And I think the reason, potentially, that this is not getting the huge amount of you know, coverage as it could be, is that I saw the headline initially, and it was like massive cover up about Obama bin Laden raid or something like that.
Right.
Was like the headline or whatever.
And
I immediately assumed that he wasn't dead. Bingo. I think that was everyone's
yeah.
assumption upon hearing that there were bombshells about the
right.
bin Laden raid, was that someone was going to say that he wasn't actually in there. He was alive. He's in some cave somewhere or something like that. Or, you know, Saudi Arabia's covering him somewhere or another.
Right.
And, like, that just, I think...
Once we all realized he was still dead.
I think it was sort of like, well, he's dead.
Now we know.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to sort of see if you're not, like, involved in the sort of, like, the... defining what the optics are going to be in a story like this. Like, it's hard to see why it's important to know whether Pakistan was involved or not.
Right. And certainly you don't want your own government lying to you about
no.
things like this, but like, I mean, you know, if they...
This is like a pretty minor quibble.
If their plan was to make it sound more heroic and make the Navy SEALs sound like they did a really bang-up job, then, I mean, okay,
right.
on some level. I mean,
right.
you know,
like,
it's annoying that they did
sure.
that.
But
like, outside of being annoying, I just can't really...
It's not Abu Ghraib.
No.
It's not.
Right.
It's hard as an uninformed observer to really invest yourself
right.
in the conspiracy.
It's not
here.
The reporting that the New York Times did to get us into the war.
No,
in the first
exactly.
place, or, you know, into the Iraq War. What's her name? Judith Miller. You know, it's not on those levels of, you know, at least to me.
No.
Anyway, and maybe it is to some
maybe
people.
If you're an expert in this situation, it is.
Right, but the CIA and the Pentagon and
this is one of those situations where it's been dissected within an inch of its life.
Well, and that's what
and
so
like,
many people are sort of like, first off, it's one
it
unnamed
like,
source that he claims to have corroborated it with. But like that, I think a lot of people are sort of like suspect of
right,
who
of
it is
source.
That is telling this, why it is that it's coming out now.
Yeah.
I mean, what, and also sort of, you know, it's like,
what
the,
this tells
the,
us.
Right, the, you know, the guy who used to be the you know, media guy for the CIA or whatever was basically like, you know, you would have to believe that, you know, President Obama, Robert Gates, the head of the CIA, you would have to believe that all of these people, you know,
like
Hillary Clinton
had a
even
giant
had,
conspiracy
like, had
that
all
they all
agreed
to
a giant conspiracy that sort of wouldn't really be a conspiracy that you would need to agree to
right.
in the first place. Like, why would they all agree to this weird conspiracy? Like, why haven't the Pakistanis claimed that this is inaccurate up to this point? Like, I mean,
right.
like,
so many questions.
There's a lot of questions
and
that like make it
whichever
sense
way it goes,
right.
it's not that important.
And no one has really sort of like outwardly called Seymour Hirsch crazy at this point. I mean,
no.
they're obviously saying that like this is wrong, but I mean, for what it's worth, his reporting in the last couple of years has sort of been called into question. I mean, he still is sort of like a very revered reporter, but right. I mean, even this was not published in the New Yorker, which is normally where he's published. It was published in the, what was the London Book Review or something
like
that.
Yeah, it was
that.
Like somewhere like
in a very
really
sort of like rando random. Off. He also had like a story that was supposed to have like a lot of bombshells about like, you know, the chemical weapons like being used in Syria in 2013, and both the Washington Post and the New York Times turned it down. Like I said, no one is sort of like outwardly claiming that he's like losing his mind, but he's sort of getting old and he's not being published in the places that he used to be published
right.
in.
And so he's I think making there's claims sort of like, that are of...
There's the insinuation that maybe he's not at the top of his game right. any longer. I think he's exactly. almost 80.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an old man.
Yeah.
I saw him at the Daily Show the last time at the Daily Show, and he was old then. So he could only have gotten older between now and then. It's the only option.
Yeah. Even John McCain is like,
what the hell is going on? I know.
Right? Like once John McCain is being like, the president did the right thing, this is crazy. What did he say exactly? He was like, we've never heard of anything like this. And sort of like...
This is a great success on the part of the administration. We all admire the president's decision. The president and his team did the right thing here.
Yeah.
I mean, this was like one of those situations that was all optics anyway.
Well, right.
Going and killing Osama bin Laden was not strategically necessary in terms of fighting terrorism abroad. It was just like a thing we needed to do symbolically.
At the point that they did it. Correct.
If George Bush had done it years before, it would have been.
Right, exactly.
But at the point that they did it, it was like a shell of himself living in a weird compound in Pakistan.
Right,
like,
it wasn't up to anything at that point.
No.
Right.
He's just probably watching the same bootleg DVDs of...
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you do, probably, if you're in a compound.
Yeah.
I mean...
That's what I'd do.
That's what I would do, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm doing that a lot in my own compound of my house. So.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if he had Netflix.
Yeah. You don't need bootlegs anymore because of Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, when I
bet he did. If you're Osama bin Laden, you can get Netflix in your compound, for God's sake.
I feel like, though, if you're in Pakistan, you can probably get all the world's bootleg DVDs. It's probably $1 for every DVD.
That's true.
Don't need Netflix.
Yeah. True.
Like, what's he going to use a VPN to, like, get American Netflix so that we can watch Parenthood? Like, what? What's his plan then?
Maybe.
Be horrified by the scantily clad women on, you know, family dramas in the U.S.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's not a thing. In any case, speaking of news of this era, I guess,
sure.
The Patriot Act expires on June 1st. And so Congress is scheduling a vote for late May, May 22nd.
It has 22nd. To be passed May 22nd.
It has to be before May 22nd
because
they're going on vacation, as usual.
That's Memorial Day week, I think.
Yeah. And they take a week off for all the things that
Memorial
you take a day
Day
off for normally.
Exactly, yes.
And Rand Paul is having none of it.
Yeah.
He is threatening to filibuster, which I'm into.
I'm into, too, and I'm actually sort of surprised, and that's one of the reasons that I'm actually into this, because I know that he is against the, you know, the NSA spying.
Right, but he's in a Republican primary right now.
He's been having to sound like he's fine with going to war with Iran recently, you know what I mean?
Like, he's fine with drones, he's fine to going to war with Iran, like...
Right.
All the things that he's not fine with are things that he's currently fine with.
Right, exactly. So, this, I'm real into.
Yeah. No, and I love a Rand Paul filibuster.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the people who really can talk for too long.
Yeah. Well, and this, the Patriot Act is, needs filibustered big time.
It needs to be filibustered, and it would be great if the filibuster came from the right.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's something that the right really shouldn't have been comfortable with in the first place.
It's
a huge incursion on your freedom. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's something that the right is not into, and the left is not into. All people besides George Bush are not into that.
Exactly. Well, that was one of the, you know, I mean, this... Yeah, and there is going to be a filibuster potentially from the left as well.
Right,
so, I mean, it's going to come from all sides because before Rand Paul said he was going to do this, Ron Wyden also said that he was going to do the same thing. So
Less famous for his filibustering skills, I'm glad Rand Paul is potentially stepping in.
Yeah.
Because if Bernie's not there filibustering, I feel like Bernie and Rand are the two people you'd want filibustering in the Senate. And that's who filibusters things.
That's
Ron Wyden, he's untested.
Ted Cruz.
Or Ted Cruz is a good filibuster, too.
Mm-hmm.
He can read
Green Eggs
and Ham.
Yeah, exactly.
But in any case, so this is... We're not sure whether it's going to be a talking filibuster or not.
Right.
We hope against hope that it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're not sure if it's going to be an exciting filibuster, but there is potentially going to be... Because there's potentially going to be enough people that don't want this to be renewed that they won't need to do a talking filibuster.
Right,
but,
exactly.
God, I hope they have to at least try.
Right. There might be enough people to not meet the 60 vote threshold. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
What a dream.
It's interesting, though, because he is in this primary and, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who are really into this. I mean, well, Mitch McConnell's really into it, and he's the one who's going to have to bring it to the
vote. I also think, though, this is how he sets himself apart for a certain kind of libertarian Republican
totally
vote
agree.
That's what he's going for anyway.
Right.
You know, if he's going to be the candidate of freedom, which is his thing, none
right.
of these other people are the candidate of freedom. Marco Rubio doesn't believe in your freedom. Ted
no.
Cruz doesn't believe in your freedom. Like,
no.
these are not the candidates of freedom. They're the candidates of restrictive laws that, you know, legislate, you know, your ovaries.
right.
Like, that's not being the candidate of freedom. Like, he is really, I think, positioning himself to kind of get those, like, libertarian, like, live free or die
people.
He should
people. Be. I felt like recently he was kind of getting
away
from that.
He was kind of getting away from that.
So,
but I think this is a good move for him, I think.
I agree.
You know, I think there's plenty of those people in a Republican primary who probably don't vote in the Republican
right.
primary unless there's a candidate to vote for. What were they going to do with Ron Paul gone?
Well,
they were going to vote for Rand.
Well, and the other thing that I will say about the thing that just at least makes this politically smart for him is we're going to be talking about his filibuster if he does it.
Right.
I mean,
then
nothing
he...
gets you named. Nobody, well, people knew, but a lot of people didn't know who Ted Cruz was until he shut down the government.
No.
You know,
Bernie Sanders was considered irrelevant in the Senate
until
he had an 8-hour filibuster
or
whatever.
However long
yeah.
it was. Yeah.
I mean, like, a filibuster is a great
name
PR move.
Totally. Yeah.
And he could use it because he's not going to win this primary. So
no.
He could
exactly.
really use it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, American hero Liz Warren and President Obama are in, like, a war of words right now.
They really
over
are.
Over the Trans-Pacific.
It's a huge
whatchamacallit. Yeah.
Partnership.
Partnership. The trade negotiations. The TPP, those
right.
trade negotiations
yeah.
that are going on with 11 other Asian countries or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, in the past, Warren is very against it.
Right.
Free trade agreements are not the far left's thing to
no,
begin with.
They're not.
She's very against it because she has said in the past, they're talking about giving it fast track authority, which means they only need a simple majority to pass the agreement, but it can't have any amendments. So, she has said in the past that giving the president fast track authority, or giving the negotiation, the president fast track authority, would allow certain changes that would undermine some Dodd-Frank regulations
right.
in the process of passing this bill. That it would give the president authority to, like, override certain Dodd-Frank
yeah.
regulations. And so she's not having that, because she's a big financial watchdog, as
right.
we know, and she understands Dodd-Frank, which we don't. So we trust her to know. Obama would like it to be fast-tracked, because then
correct.
They can't add ridiculous amendments to it, and also he wants it to pass, because he's
yep.
sort of a Republican-ish guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is hoping to make the case that granting fast track authority is a good thing.
Right.
And so he kind of, like, fired back at Liz Warren over
right.
the weekend.
Said she was absolutely
said she
wrong.
Was yeah, he said he used the term absolutely wrong to describe Liz Warren, which is not ever a correct statement.
No.
That's,
she's never
you
wrong.
You know you're
either.
Getting away from the truth when you're describing Liz Warren as absolutely wrong. Because she's basically saying, like, this is going to be good for Wall Street. You're doing this for Wall Street. Like, this is not good
yeah.
for people.
Right.
And so then today, she was like, oh, no. And then gave an interview where she hit back at him and was basically like, you carried out this entire process in secret, so we have no idea what you're talking about. You know, all of these things are classified.
Yep.
So if you really think this is so great for the American people, why have you classified this agreement?
Right, they haven't.
These
they
negotiations.
Have, right, and they only have a certain amount of time to read it, I think,
exactly.
too, because they haven't even had a chance to look at the thing
no,
yet.
No, no. So she was like, if you're not being transparent, so it can't be that great.
Right.
And then she was also like, not only is this a problem because it gives you the authority to undermine Dodd-Frank regulations that we have already passed as a thing
yes.
that people wanted, but it also means that a future Republican president, because they would be allowed to use a simple majority to pass this agreement,
a trade agreement
could,
right.
you know, can suddenly undermine them further, basically.
Yep.
So she was sort of like, oh no.
Yep.
And Obama was like,
screw off.
Screw off. And they are now in a highly public war of words.
I like it.
Which is wonderful for
mm-hmm.
everyone.
You know how we love our intra-party fighting.
We love our intra-party fighting.
It's one of our favorite things.
Exactly. So in any case, that's very exciting. We're going to keep an eye on that because the sort of far-left Senate is very against the TPP.
Right. Well, and it's also going to play, it's going to, you know, Bernie Sanders is very against it.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard a real sharp answer about it. From Hillary Clinton. Yeah,
no.
We haven't heard a sharp answer from
I mean,
her about
Hillary
anything.
Clinton
we're
going
to get to that later. She hasn't,
right. She's
not
in favor of it. I can answer
anything.
This question for her.
Right. I feel like she did say something about, like, how there was, like, one provision of it that she was, like, specifically against. Because that was when she said, I agree with Elizabeth Warren. Remember when
right.
she said that? But
she's
it wasn't
to, it's because she's
it
trying to suck up to Elizabeth.
Whole...
She is a person who loves free trade. Who probably came up with one thing because she was like, the left needs me to be against this.
Right.
So she came up with something that's irrelevant to be against that is in no way
right.
relates to her opinion on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, actually.
Partnership, right.
And is now walking around not saying anything.
Wasn't the State Department involved in this when she was there? I mean, like, this is not something
she's a proponent of free trade.
Of course.
The Clintons are free traders. Yeah. That's a thing that they ushered in.
Right.
Free trade is, like, their thing.
The other thing that'll be interesting to see, too, is, you know, there are... It hasn't really started to come out yet, but there are people on the far right who are against free trade, too. And they, I feel like, aren't being as vocal as she is. The sort of
Protect America people.
But it'll be interesting to see, like, once this actually sort of, like, comes to be, like, whether the people who, like, just don't really particularly care for Obama and who don't really like even their own party's stances, like, you know, Mitch McConnell is really into this bill, too, which I feel like should just be assigned to everyone. But, I mean, you know, there are the sort of, like, you know, former, like, you know, Pat Buchanan Reform Party folks who, like, are not into these free trade agreements either. So you may see sort of, like, another interesting coalition, which is another thing that we love.
We love an interesting coalition, too.
Of people from the, you know, the fringes of both parties really coming out against this, which I would love.
That would be amazing.
I just whispered that. I said I would love that in case you didn't hear
me. This is radio. You have to speak it out loud.
No, I realized that as soon as I did it. I was like, that might
not
have been clear.
It's like making a hand gesture.
Let me reiterate.
Right. I would love that.
I would love that. Yes, it's important to know.
No, I think this could be a really... This is sort of like slowly growing into a very interesting issue. It was sort of... It was not getting a lot of traction, I think, in part because no one knows what the details of this agreement are, and that's kind of why Liz Warren has been hitting Obama all this time on it.
Well, and I think it's partially... Well, it's not partially. It's mostly due to the secrecy, I think, is why, like, she is so angry about it. I think she'd be angry about it anyway because she would be against it.
Right, she's against the free trade agreement,
I think that it would have enough votes if it was just out there for everyone to look at. So, you know, people on the far left and the far right might be mad about it, but right now it's all just sort of...
Speculation. They're all working themselves into a frenzy about it because they don't know what's in it.
They don't know what's in it. If they knew it was in it, they probably still might be mad about it, but they would have 60 votes to pass the thing.
This goes back to my insightful Huffington Post piece where I talk about the power of the information vacuum and how you should never allow an information vacuum to fester because people fill it with their own information, even if it's not right.
And that's what Elizabeth
She's
Warren is doing
going
right
around
now.
Being like, well, this is going to undermine Dodd-Frank. She doesn't fucking know if it's going to undermine Dodd-Frank. That's not something she can possibly know because she doesn't know what the details are of the agreement.
Right. But she can say it because nobody can prove her otherwise.
No one can prove her otherwise. No one is willing to prove her otherwise. And she can say that this is a concern of hers because it is a concern. Right. For sure. She didn't pull it out of thin air. It's possible that this will undermine Dodd-Frank. But, I mean, they're allowing that to be the narrative. And that only makes us wonder if it's worse than that. It only makes us feel like it must be worse than we could possibly imagine.
Right.
Which is why you don't do this.
And maybe it's not.
And maybe it's not. But I bet it is.
It probably is.
That's usually how these things work.
That's right.
Oh, and there were jobs numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of outright lies and...
Oh, my gosh. And this one, this is just a prime example of...
The uselessness of how ridiculous they are. Freaking jobs rate.
So we'll give you the fake ones from this month, and then we'll tell you how fake last month's were.
Right.
Because this month, we apparently added 223,000 jobs.
Sounds great.
Sounds great. The jobless rate went from 5.5% to 5.4%, which is the lowest level since March 2008. So, like,
good,
you know,
work us.
Slow clap to that. Now, remember last month
when we brought you all
of the terrible jobs report? The terrible
jobs
numbers.
We had been seeing months where there were like 300,000 jobs, 400,000 jobs.
And then March was a dud, and everybody just went into like a full-fledged panic.
Well, it was an earned panic.
It was an earned panic because it was actually worse than that. You want to know how worse it was? How much worse it was? They said it was 125,000. It was actually 85,000.
They lost by 40,000.
That's 40,000. 40,000 is almost 50% of 85,000. They were off by almost 50% last month.
That is... Too much to be off. Why have a number at that point?
Just wait till you know the number.
Speculate wildly.
Like, could
at that
we have
point.
A jobs report like every 2 months that have like the correct jobs reports?
Could we assume that the jobs numbers take an extra month to come?
Release March's now as opposed to releasing April's.
I mean,
now?
This is like not helpful to have these jobs numbers. That doesn't tell us anything about the economy.
I mean, I guess it gives something. It gives everybody something to do every month. But
that's true.
I mean, it's too. Dumb.
It's too dumb.
It's too dumb.
If you're releasing statistics that can be 50% off any given month, then you're not releasing statistics.
Right.
You're releasing wildly inaccurate numbers of of general sorts that have nothing to do with anything.
Because everybody feels good about 223,000, but let's say, for example, we're off by 50% again. Then we would be back down to 100-some thousand, which is what we were all panicked about last month.
I mean...
So we could maybe we should be panicking now. But there's no way to know.
Or maybe we should be celebrating. Maybe we added 500,000 jobs. We don't know.
Nope.
Every month it's a mystery. every month we don't know how to feel about the jobs numbers. Because good news is never good news with the jobs numbers, and bad news is never bad news.
Or bad news is worse news.
Or bad news is worse news in this case. I mean, it's just like... It's these aren't statistics, guys. This is not how math works. This is not science and math and other like fact-based
guesses
things.
And hunches and hopes and dreams.
There's like a level of truthiness with these jobs numbers that should not be tolerated by the American public.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of things that should not be tolerated by the American public, good segue, Lila.
Boom. You did it.
Hillary Clinton.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we're getting into 2016 news,
right.
Which
is... It's about to get real, guys.
It's about to get real. But this Hillary Clinton, we're starting with Hillary Clinton because, you know, you may not have heard much from her lately. She's been...
You're not the only one.
She has been giving some speeches. She's sure. She had a talk and she went to Nevada, I think, last week and, like, said some things about immigration or whatever. But, you know, we have talked a lot on this podcast about sort of all of the things that, you know, her campaign is claiming to, at least just sort of internally, has been saying that they are going to, like, handle the press differently this time.
Yeah.
Because they've learned their lesson last time.
Time.
You know, this clash with the press, and, like, they learned their lesson in 2008, and the press hasn't been kind to her, and all of this. And that's...
We're in day 29 of the Hillary Clinton campaign. Right. We are in... Like, we are not in day 29 of her answering questions about her campaign or in any way talking to the media.
We're in day 21 of her not having answered a question to the press.
Correct. basically, she has, she's been talking for 28 days. She's taken 8 questions from the press.
Right.
That's 1 every 3.6 days, if you want to find out the average there.
Yeah.
The last day that she answered a question was April 21st.
Yep.
And she hasn't taken a question in 20 days.
Yeah, for 20 days. Come on. And the press is taking...
What are you doing running? Like, what are you doing?
And
is your running strategy if you're not... Like, the press is... The reason that you announce that you're running is to start talking to the press.
Right. And the press is taking note. Big time.
Because there was a real snarky comment from the New York Times.
Right. They posted an item on their first draft blog last week titled Questions for Hillary Clinton on Immigration, in which they wrote, "This is the first installment of a regular first draft feature in which the Times will publish questions we would have asked Mrs. Clinton had we had the opportunity."
Boom.
Oh, yikes.
Like, that's... The New York Times should be your bread and butter here.
That's it.
I mean, they love a middle-of-the-road Democrat to support.
I mean,
they're not going to support Bernie Sanders because they love money, too. It's the New York Times.
Yeah.
Like, this is... You shouldn't be getting sass from the New... Like, once you're getting sass from the New York Times, by the way, you've really crossed the line. It takes a lot to get them to use sassy language in the New York Times. Like, that's like a very sassy comment.
It totally is.
But also... All it's doing is giving Carly Fiorina something to talk about,
right? And
which is really annoying.
This is hilarious to me too, because like Carly Fiorina is having like this weird girl fight with Hillary Clinton right now.
It's a one-sided girl fight.
It's a one-sided girl fight, and also like it's as if she's forgotten that she's in like 17th place in the Republican primary. She's running a general election campaign against Hillary Clinton right now. She doesn't understand the process.
She can't run a primary campaign because it's too like if she runs the general campaign, she can be like, I'm going to talk about the female candidate because I'm female. And that's all she has going for her in the primary currently. She doesn't have ideas or plans going for her. But she also like has no base of support in that primary. Like, there's no one to vote for her in the primary. She's not a real person. So, like, she's just sort of, like, trying to, I think, kind of, like, make herself into a brand so that, A, she can get a book deal after this, obviously, but also probably so that she can be among the, you know, in the talk for a vice presidential appointment because they'll need a woman on the ticket, potentially.
Right.
So, I feel like she's just sort of, like, trying to prove her bones, like, make her bones fighting Hillary Clinton to show that she can be the other woman.
Right.
She
can be the attack dog.
She can be the attack dog woman.
Right, exactly. But she released a hilarious statement, or her campaign did, because they said, in the last 8 days, Carly has been interviewed almost 30 times and answered well over 300 questions. She continues to impress voters, pundits, and reporters alike with her willingness to share her thoughts and ideas, and to answer any question from whether she likes hot dogs... to how she would tackle the crisis in the Middle East. This is in stark contrast to many other candidates, and most especially to Hillary Clinton. Dun, dun, dun. Like, she's willing to answer the hard questions about hot dogs.
Yeah, no, she'll take a question about her favorite barbecue food. She's not afraid.
No.
She's got answers about the Middle East and barbecues.
That's right. And speaking of hot dogs, boom! Shabam. God. We're on it.
We're on it tonight.
Segways.
Segway number two.
Because you know who loves hot dogs? Chris Christie.
Our very own Chris Christie.
$82,000 worth of hot dogs this man has eaten recently.
Chris Christie, a man who, by the way, has already had the lap band surgery. Because he was... Poor Chris Christie, by the way. Because Chris Christie got that surgery because he was going to run for president.
Yeah.
And we, as unfair as this may be, as horrible and judgmental and, you know, take no prisoners as the television age is, mm-hmm. like, you can't get elected to be the president if you're obese.
No, he was too fat to be president.
Like, that is the
And I'm not afraid
sad,
to say it. You can call that me is, a fattest. I don't
That's just
care.
The reality that's, of living in the television life. Age. It's the same reason that all the Republican candidates have the right. same fake hair.
Right.
It's the same reason
it's
that
the same
all
reason
of them...
It's the same reason why Mike Huckabee lost, like, 700
exactly.
pounds.
Exactly. It's the same reason why, you know, someone like Sarah Palin, who doesn't make a lick of sense, was able to get as far as she was in her own, you know, as a vice presidential candidate. It's
yeah.
because she looked the part.
Yeah, she was reasonable.
I mean, that's life in the fast lane, guys. But in any case, Chris Christie, a man who got the lap band surgery only to have his ambitions derailed by Bridgegate, which will never go away. Recently, it was discovered by a watchdog group in New Jersey that he spent more than $82,000 in taxpayer money on concessions at NFL games.
It's too good. It's, and it was and the Republican committee knew about it.
No,
and
no.
so and paid it back because they were afraid that it would cause this. A big scandal.
Yeah.
Like, they repaid $82,000 of taxpayer money for concessions. It was to this... It was.
And I don't... I've never had $82,000.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
On concessions.
I mean...
It's not on plane tickets. I've never spent that much on plane tickets.
No.
In my life, probably.
No. And I'm sure he was doing a lot of entertaining, and I'm sure it was a lot of, like,
sure.
high-class concessions, like, in some luxury box or something sure. like that. So, like, I mean...
Bubbly.
Probably wasn't all hot dogs.
No.
But, I mean...
NFL concessions? $82,000 on NFL concessions?
Come on.
Come on, Chris Christie.
Yikes.
God.
Yeah.
It's like, with these people... Chris Christie, I feel like, makes his own luck.
He really does.
Like, he can't sit on a chair...
Nope.
Fell off. He's a man who legit fell out of a rolling chair.
That's right.
He's a man who tried to create a traffic jam to piss off a political rival.
Yeah.
Like, he's the kind of guy who gets caught spending $82,000 on concessions.
Yep.
He's not the guy that gets away with it. He should know himself by now. He should know that he's not the guy who gets away with that. And so he should act accordingly.
Exactly. This is what we say about Hillary Clinton all the time.
All the time.
Right?
He has a similar problem to her.
This is a do better moment
right.
for
like,
Chris Christie.
Chris
That's
Christie,
what we always say about Hillary Clinton. Like,
Chris Christie is a man who knows that he has certain limitations.
Right.
He comes off as an asshole. So, like, right. don't cause a traffic jam just to piss somebody off.
Right.
He's overweight. So
don't spend
$82,000 on concessions. Americans are going to feel weird about that. there's so many, like, you come off as an asshole. Don't call a lady sweetheart condescendingly at any of your rallies. Like,
yeah.
At your town halls, like, there's just so many things that
yeah.
he just needs to know himself.
Yeah, he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's in denial about himself.
He really is.
We should have an intervention.
Yeah. Jeb Bush is really in denial about his brother.
Oh, my God. This situation is comical
right.
on many levels, but well, also really points to the fact that it is actually Jeb Bush that is the stupid Bush.
Well, it's Jeb Bush that's the stupid Bush. I also think that this points to, like, a lot of really interesting things about, like, the people who vote in the Republican primaries
yeah.
and who also hold the purse strings here. Because,
yes.
Because
yeah,
initially,
there's a side primary going on
right,
here.
Right, exactly. Because initially... When Jeb Bush was, before he even announced that he was going to, or has he even announced that he was going to run?
No,
officially,
he hasn't,
but
he
I mean,
officially
like,
announced.
He has been sort of like making it clear. He has had a lot of statements where he said things like, I'm my own man, you know, I don't necessarily agree with my father
right.
and my brother
this
on
is,
such and such.
You know,
but now what he is finding is that the rich people who hand out the money in the Republican primaries, such as Sheldon Adelson and other, you know, rich people and people with ties to Israel and things like that, are people who really sort of don't think that George W. Bush did such a terrible job when it came to foreign policy.
They're the only people. That. But they are running a side primary in which getting Sheldon Adelson's vote is more important than getting a Republican primary vote.
And that primary is happening currently.
Currently, yeah.
Sheldon Adelson just had his big get-together in Las Vegas at one of his casinos where they, you know, everybody sort of like paraded through or whatever. And they had a whole night devoted to George W. Bush's, you know, excellence in his policy on Israel and the Middle East.
Sheldon Adelson is a man who loves him from Israel. They celebrated him.
Yeah.
Sheldon Adelson, will remind you, is a man whose major mission in life is to get the American embassy in Israel moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Sheldon Adelson, I also learned on Meet the Press this week, is a person who is fairly socially liberal. They are on Meet the Press, they are doing a they did the first
meet the people that decide the election.
Yes, they did a like it was the first of the series actually. And they talked about him, and that's all it is. It's just they're going to do reporting on basically
meet
everybody
the people
who's
bought
like
the election.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they did Sheldon Adelson, but he's pro-choice. He's yeah, but he's like so
but he's
overly
so wildly crazy
about
Israel that
nonsense.
He can't see. He doesn't care about anything.
No,
else.
Doesn't care about anything else. Yeah.
Well, but it's like being pro-choice is all well and good if you're Sheldon Adelson. Yeah. He's not going to need an abortion.
But no, he's that's very true. But Jeb Bush, sort of in response to all of this, is now claiming that his foreign policy advisor is his brother.
It's like
what
kind of crazy cuckoo universe do we live in?
That is.
Sheldon Adelson, by the way, has already kind of rejected Jeb Bush for not being
pro-Israel enough.
So Jeb Bush is now sucking up to him because he's like, wait a minute, it's not votes that decide the election, it's Sheldon Adelson.
By trying to remind people that he's related to George W. Bush, which would lose you basically
any vote anywhere. Aside from Sheldon Adelson, there are zero people left, Republicans and Democrats alike, who think that George Bush was a good president.
Correct.
I mean, we remember in 2008 that they were distancing themselves to a degree that was almost comical.
Right.
I mean, and in 2012 even, they were kind of like, there was no room for a George Bush discussion.
No.
In the last two rounds, no one has wanted to talk about George Bush.
Yeah.
In this round, we're already going to have a lot of weird discussions about that era because of Hillary Clinton's vote, Iraq war vote.
Well, right.
So
well, and
this
also,
is a dangerous time to be aligning yourself with him because everyone's soon going to remember that they didn't like him very much.
Well, and he even went a step further because he was on Fox News and they were sort of like talking about his foreign policy. And he claimed outright that he would have authorized the Iraq war. And then he was like, just like Hillary Clinton would have, which I feel like is a thing that people are going to be reminding
That's
people of a
all
lot,
the time,
which is a problem. For her. And,
welcome to
and
our
for
problem
us.
With the Democratic primary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, he did sort of like go on to say that, you know, well, it's because of the intelligence that they had at the time and knowing what the intelligence
is
now.
We all knew the intelligence,
sort of, like,
by the way, at the time was not sufficient.
Right. And this
we remember that.
And that argument doesn't work either. It didn't work for Hillary Clinton. It didn't work for John Kerry. Tried to do the whole sort of like, well, I voted, you know, that
based
was
on
the
what
whole
I knew
sort
at
of like,
the time. Yeah.
I voted, you know, against it after I voted before, you know, for, I, whatever his whole line was that got roundly made fun of because he, you know, claimed that he wouldn't have voted for it if he knew it. Whatever. Anyway, it doesn't work.
It doesn't
like that,
work.
It's not a thing. It's not going to work for Jeb Bush.
No.
It shouldn't be working for Hillary Clinton. The fact
it's not
that
going
it,
to work for Hillary
it's
Clinton.
It's not going to.
It's just not been a discussion. You know when it will become a discussion? When Jeb Bush is running for president against Hillary Clinton.
Right.
That's her worst nightmare.
Or,
I don't know why.
Right.
Why, guys?
Or when one of the Republicans who didn't have to vote for the thing is the candidate.
Well, that's the
and
other
that's,
thing.
She's
like,
the only person currently
only
who
person,
had to vote for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Jeb Bush had a free pass here.
Right. And so did most of the other Republicans.
He had the
they
mark
either
of
weren't
being
in
a
the
Bush.
Senate yet, or they are governors, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But nobody else running was in the Senate and had to make that vote, which is a problem for her. Except
Huge.
Bernie Sanders, who voted against
voted
it,
against
by
it,
the way.
Because he makes the right choices. He's
right.
a man who makes the right choices.
Right.
No, I have said this a lot about Jeb Bush because I feel like he is somebody who has the sort of, he has the connections of being a Bush without the baggage of being George Bush. And he routinely messes that
fucks
up.
Fucks it up, I know.
Because he's someone who in a Bush-Clinton election could have been the one who said, I would not have voted for the Iraq
right,
war.
Right, exactly.
And that is why I hate Hillary Clinton for various reasons. I mean, that is what frustrates me about Hillary Clinton.
Well, at least he helped us out on this front, I guess.
Thank God. That was a free... Hillary, your luck is not going to be that good all the time.
No.
I feel like we need to remind you that this is going to be a problem coming up for you.
Yeah, I also don't think he's going to win this primary, by the way.
No, it doesn't seem like it's...
Which is interesting.
It's confusing to me. I feel like maybe he'll be a late bloomer. You know how, like... There's always a front, like there's a new front runner every five seconds in the Republican primary, and then they settle on the same boring white man regardless of what happens.
Right.
I feel like there's a possibility.
Yeah, he's going to be like the John McCain of this election.
The Mitt Romney. Romney peaked. When I re-listened to our very first podcast, that was something that we talked about, where we were sort of like, it seemed, you know, Romney is the only one who hadn't peaked at up until that point. Santorum was just starting to peak.
Right.
And
Herman Cain already had.
Michelle Bachman already had. Exactly. All of those people already had. And we were like, Romney is going to peak at exactly the right moment because he's so boring that he had no chance to peak before that.
Right.
But when all the crazies get filtered out after they've peaked and then we figure out that they're crazy.
They're nuts, right.
Like, Romney's going to be who's left standing. I feel like that is what would have happened for Jeb Bush if he weren't such a fucking idiot. Right.
I just think maybe there are, I mean, I think there might be, the problem for him is that not, Mitt Romney was literally running against only crazy people.
That's true.
There was literally not one other sane person to be had there. Like, every single other person in that primary was literally, like, you know, padded wall, like, institutional crazy.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, there are certainly those people in this primary now, but they aren't all that way.
No.
So that, I feel like, is maybe where he's going to run into a problem.
I feel like whatever happens, though, the money finds the way. He's going to be the moneyed candidate. Even if Sheldon Adelson sort of hates him a little bit, he's going to end up, he's the moneyed candidate. He's the establishment candidate. And though, especially in a Republican primary, that money always finds the way.
It does.
It buys more votes than votes buy.
Yep. That was profound, by the way.
That was profound. I'm really on fire
today. Yeah, you really just fell into that, too, didn't
you? Yeah, I started saying it, and I was like, I got to finish this sentence at some point.
Good work.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. You finished it right.
Yeah, no.
With a bang.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Mike Huckabee, a man who's running for president.
Speaking of the people, he's one of the people who should be institutionalized.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Thinks he knows why he'd make a good president. It's explained in one of his weird pseudoscience medical commercials, infomercial things that he has been taping for the last few years.
Yeah.
He basically, before he declared his candidacy, he'd been hawking these, quote, Bible-based cancer cures.
We're going to get to those
and
in
some,
a
like,
second.
Weird program that is some sketchy thing that was supposed to reverse diabetes.
Right, and both the New York Times and the American
Diabetes Association and the Canadian Diabetes Association
both cautioned against treatments like the one he was peddling.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe not so great.
Maybe, well, they're not science-based because they're Bible-based, and that's a different kind of science we're not familiar with.
Right.
He was asked about it on Face the Nation and said, you know, I have to defend everything that I've ever done. I'm not doing those infomercials, obviously, now as a candidate for president. But if that's the worst thing that someone can say about me, that I advocated for people that have diabetes to do something to reverse and stop the incredible pain of that, then I'm going to be a heck of a good president.
Oh, so that's what makes him a good president.
Yes.
Being able to lie about diabetes cures and Bible-based cancer
cures.
By
doing that, he was encouraging them to find out whether they had diabetes.
Yeah.
So obviously, he's a good enough president for that.
Now, we went ahead and did a little research about what this Bible-based cancer cure was, because obviously we weren't going to just let that slide without knowing exactly what that was. So he sent an email to supporters a while back. I think it was in January.
These are emails he's sending to supporters.
Right.
This is Mike Huckabee, a person who is running for president.
Running for president.
Has been emailing political supporters with this email. He has won a caucus once.
I mean, this is a man who has won a presidential election.
Right. And these are political supporters of his.
Right. Okay. Here we go. He says, a special message from Health Sciences Institute.
That's not a real fake thing.
Yeah. He said, they have important information to share with you. Sponsorships like this help to allow us to continue to send you. Oh, okay. Sorry. We're reading this off a small infographic.
Very tiny infographic.
Read it. Right. Okay.
Basically,
we're going to go on.
It's a sponsored message that he's sending
message. Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, so here it is. Dear reader, I'd love to see an atheist try to explain
this.
That's a link. Mm-hmm, that's a link. It's a video about a recent discovery made by biblical researchers in Maryland. While investigating a certain New Testament passage, they found something they never expected. A mysterious healing message within ancient scripture.
Ooh.
It appears to contain a secret for defeating one of our worst diseases, and the science behind it has been verified by one of America's top doctors.
Incorrect.
Watch it here. To Healing Miracles. And then it's from some crazy person. So the link takes you...
But there's also a PS that says,
oh yeah, PS.
This is America, and people are free to believe what they want, but I've yet to hear an atheist offer a real explanation for the healing message revealed in this video.
That's because they are not going to do that.
No, they're not going to bother looking at this message.
No, that's right. So the link goes to, or takes you to a webpage, and it says... at the top, did our creator encode a cancer cure on the 859th page of an ancient Bible? First off, like, I mean, what? This is like that
I would love to know who these researchers are that were investigating the Bible and made this new discovery
about
diabetes.
This is like that one guy who supposedly, like, had found, like, clues within the King James version of the Bible, which is, like, not even, like, the actual version of the Bible, like, if we're talking about real Bibles, about how God had hidden, like, when the end times were coming. Do you remember this? That crazy old guy who, like, declared we were going to have the end of the world because, like,
the guy who had already declared the end of the world was going to happen several times before that.
Yeah. He said, so...
And they also, what's so funny is that they had the same link, basically, up about both diabetes and cancer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this same website also asks, did our creator encode a cancer cure in the 859th page
Answer,
of the Bible?
No.
No, he didn't. He didn't do that.
For various reasons, by the way.
Well,
namely, because the creator did not take up pen and parchment to write the Bible, nor did he have specific things on specific pages, because... Whoever was writing the Bible wasn't writing it.
They didn't write it as like a thing where they sat down and they were like, "I'm to have an organized pages, thing here." Right?
Pages. It's like there's not a page number. I have two different Bibles and they all have different page numbers.
Of course they do.
Like,
all Bibles have different pages. Every version of the Bible that you could possibly come up with in the world.
They all have different words too.
Yeah.
They're in different languages. They were written in a different language, mind you.
The Bible,
lest we forget,
is like
everyone.
Our Greek myths. They came together, storytellers, eventually over time, put them into a book.
Yeah.
And then everyone translated it differently.
Correct.
And so nobody knows what the correct pagination for the Bible is.
That's
also,
right.
No one knows what the correct interpretation of the Bible is. No one knows anything about that. Certainly the 859th page is not a page that we're familiar with.
Mm-mm.
You can't be.
No.
It's made up page number.
Yeah, and there's definitely no cure for cancer in there.
No. Not at all.
No.
Unless, I mean, if the cure for cancer is belief...
Well, right.
Which is what they're hawking. Prayer. Yeah. Then I'm sure it's in there all over the place.
There's certainly no...
There's not, like, there's modern day cancer and diabetes sufferers will find that prayer solves... Like, that's not in the Bible.
Right. And there's also no... There's no, you know, secret, you know, pharmaceutical, you know.
No. But so, this is a man who's running for president, by the way, who believes that Bible-based remedies for... That's...
Yeah.
That's not science.
Right.
I like that he tries to link it to science. I like that he uses the word researchers in that email, and then also scientists,
you know,
and doctors.
Yeah. You know what else you don't find in the Bible?
A tax plan.
Is a coherent tax plan. Bingo.
That's it.
But Ben Carson found one.
He found one. He's
got so many people finding things in the Bible that aren't there.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Once you get too carried away with your beliefs, you can
find
anything.
You can
convince yourself of anything. Exactly. Ben Carson went on Fox News. Talk to Chris Wallace about his tax plan.
Yeah.
It's wackadoodle crazy.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I love something about this that is separate from the actual tax plan being crazy.
Yeah.
Which is that, well, we'll read you his quote, and then I will explain to you why what he just described is a real thing that you can describe in non-biblical language. He says in his plan, everyone would, quote, pay according to their ability. So he said, I got the idea, quite frankly, from the Bible. Tithing. You make $10 billion a year, you pay $1 billion. You make $10 a year, you pay $1. You get the same rates. That's pretty damn fair if you ask me. Now.
It has a flat tax.
That's a flat tax.
That's not fair.
That's not fair. A, we've discovered that through math. But also, the Bible didn't invent flat taxes. That's a term that we use in economics also. He's describing a concept we're familiar with that has already been suggested by many a Republican that we know is unfair, A, but is also not a biblical concept.
No.
It's just called a flat tax.
Yeah.
We already know what it is. He didn't have to find that in the Bible. I could have told him what a flat tax was.
He could have found it from Steve Forbes.
He could exactly.
A man who ran for president on a flat tax platform.
He could have found it from Herman Cain. I mean...
Oh, yeah, the 999 plan.
The 999 plan was a flat tax.
Yeah.
I mean, countless Republican candidates have discovered the flat tax outside of the Bible.
Yeah. Plays well with evangelicals if you found it in the Bible.
If you found it in the Bible. Yeah. But he didn't invent the flat tax, and I refuse to allow him to take credit for that.
Neither did the Bible.
Neither did the Bible. Yeah. Exactly.
But Chris Wallace, bless his heart, was not going to let him get away with it. Because he said that... He said, according to the Tax Policy Center, to raise the same amount of revenue we do now, the tax rate would have to be in the low to mid 20% range. Low and middle income families would get a big tax hike, while wealthy families would actually get a big cut. So... Basically, because Carson was in his example, you know, when he did this whole the $10 billion a year, you pay $1 billion, he was giving a 10% rate. So then Carson went at that point claimed that his experts say that it would be somewhere between 10 to 15%.
His experts, not math experts.
Not math
not
experts.
When you find your tax plan in the Bible.
But
you
don't... Wallace sort of like even went past at that point because he was like, even if it is 10 to 15%,
that's
a huge rate increase for like middle income and for poor families. Because he said, and this is a quote from Chris Wallace, he said, "You talked about low income families. Not only do they Not only don't they pay, they actually get an earned income tax credit. So now you're going to have them pay 10 to 15% of whatever income they have, or 20% if my experts are right. I've got to tell you, a lot of independent studies say that the people who make out like bandits in this are the wealthy."
Which is the reason we don't have a flat tax.
Because when you think about, you know, you listeners probably got, you know, you probably got a rebate this year.
Right.
So instead, now you're going to have a flat tax. They've eliminated all of the, you know, everything else. Like, that's what flat taxers want to do. And they basically just want to set this tax. You don't get a, you know, you don't get a homeowner tax credit back. You don't get a this. You just
have
to pay.
Well, it also means that the wealthy's tax rate, which is now in the 30s,
right,
goes down to the 20%.
To whatever
and
it
your
is.
Tax rate, which is probably more like 14%,
right,
goes up to 22% or
right.
whatever. Like, that is why flat taxes don't work.
Right.
Because you don't have as much money to
They're
start with.
They're very regressive. Yeah.
So progressive taxation protects the people at the bottom of the totem pole from paying their entire income to taxes and makes the people at the top of the totem pole who have enough disposable income pay, make up their share.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a flat tax, you've basically created a regressive system because the people at the bottom pay more in terms of like their earn, you know, their actual income.
Right.
The money means more to them, basically.
And that's,
they need more of the money.
That's why it's not fair, Ben
That's
Carson.
Why it's not fair, Ben Carson. Right. And that is also why the Bible would not have advocated for it.
Correct.
Were the Bible advocating for tax plans at all, which it's not.
Right. Or cancer cures.
Or cancer cures. It doesn't advocate for either of those.
I feel like before we get off of Ben Carson really quickly, because I think we said that he had announced last week, or he was going to. We knew last week that it was imminent.
Right.
But he actually announced.
It hadn't happened by the
and
time.
And he had this big,
it was a crazy
wacko
spectacle.
Event. It was a crazy spectacle. He had choirs singing Eminem songs.
So weird.
Super weird. His wife played the violin.
Yeah, it was like
during, I think it was America the Beautiful or the Star Spangled Banner or something
like
that.
It was like reminiscent of what I imagine like weird political theater from Asia is like.
Yes, it was.
It was.
It totally was.
Surreal
it was really
and
weird.
Bizarre.
Yes. It was just sort of like they had like other speakers, I think, come out.
Yeah.
And like he did where he like told a story about like his wife, like how. What was it they play together? Like billiards or something? Or
I
they were talking about like some game that they play together or whatever. And he was like, sometimes she lets me win, but normally I just beat her or something like that. And he was like, oh, I'll have to watch myself because the press will say that I beat my wife. It was like, okay,
don't even make
weird.
The joke.
Don't even, it's not funny.
It's not funny and it's uncomfortable
it
for
was,
us.
The whole thing was just like this weird spectacle.
Yeah.
It was
spectacle.
Bizarre.
I mean, a whole choir was on stage with him singing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, spectacle is the operating term, the operative word here. Like, it was just crazy town.
Yeah. So, anyway. Welcome to the race, Ben Carson.
Yes.
Officially.
We're so happy to have you.
We are. Yes.
Meanwhile, someone out there did the world a favor this week.
Got the message from
the
rest of the world.
Got the rest of the world and shot
George Zimmerman
in the face.
We are not advocates of gun violence.
No, we're advocates for taking away all the guns, government goon style. However, this is a hilarious story. It's not usually hilarious when someone is shot.
If there's only...
He was not directly shot, by the way. We're about to tell you what actually happened.
Yeah.
But if ever there was anyone who deserved the karmic retribution
that was
this story...
If I could pick one gunshot to be fired, just and then have it be done. Like, just one last
gunshot
wish.
This is the man.
This is the shot that you want to have.
So basically, George Zimmerman was involved in this crazy shooting. I think it was today.
It was.
Where this guy, Matthew Apperson, who actually had been involved with in a previous incident with him in September, got, like, shot into his windshield in what the police were calling a road rage incident. And the sort of, like, the windshield shattered and the glass hit George Zimmerman in the face.
Right.
But it starts because last September, Apperson called the police after having this weird encounter with Zimmerman where they, like, were together at a stoplight and Zimmerman said, "Do you know who I am? I'll fucking kill you." So 2 days later, Apperson then tells the police that Zimmerman is stalking him. So then they have another run-in today. And Zimmerman apparently waves a gun at Apperson. So Apperson just fucking shoots him. He doesn't fool around this time. He doesn't wait for Zimmerman to act.
No.
He knows where this road leads.
That's right.
Then he jumps out of the car and goes and tells someone to call 911, screaming, "I just shot George Zimmerman. Call 911. Zimmerman only suffered minor facial injuries.
Yeah,
from the charge of glass. So he's been released from the hospital already.
Yeah,
and the gunman's apparently cooperating with the police, so Zimmerman is refusing to answer any questions. But this is a good time to remind you that since this whole Trayvon Martin incident, yeah, where he was not indicted, fell apart, Zimmerman has been arrested 3 times on domestic violence charges.
Yep.
And every time he was never prosecuted because the victims recanted at the last minute.
Hmm. Interesting.
Interesting.
I wonder why that's happening.
Mm-hmm. But,
couldn't be because he's threatening them.
No.
At all.
Certainly not him.
No.
Not a man who would shoot an unarmed black teenager.
Nope.
He would never threaten anyone.
No.
But I mean, this is like the craziness that is Stand Your Ground. And by the way,
well, I know.
if there's one person with whom you would have to stand your ground, it's George Zimmerman.
That's right.
Because he's proven that he'll shoot first.
That's right. That's right. Well, and the other thing is, it's like, of course this other guy had a gun too. Like, I mean, just everybody in Florida is just like
standing their ground
heat,
all over.
Right?
They're ground standing like up a right. storm over in
George
Florida.
George Zimmerman's waving his gun at me. I better get my own gun out first. I mean, that's just like not a thing
it's
that
not,
should be going
it's
on.
It's happening in the rest of the world.
No.
And
maybe
it should
Texas.
Not, maybe Texas. This certainly shouldn't be happening in Florida.
Anywhere. No.
Shouldn't be happening with that many old Jews running around. It's dangerous.
Right?
I mean, if these are all based on road rage incidents, the road rage situation in Florida is pretty disastrous.
It is.
That many old people driving around is a recipe
it's
for
bad.
Disaster
they're
anytime.
Of, they're sort of known for bad driving in it, Florida.
Florida is
amongst other things.
Famous for its bad driving.
Yeah.
So no wonder he's getting into all these road rage incidents with people. I mean, don't have a stand your ground law in a state where nobody can get to a fucking grocery store without getting caught behind 25 old people and like a crazy person in a pickup truck.
Yeah.
That's not a safe plan at all. In any case.
Oh, boy.
The greatest story is the final story, as is usually the case.
I've just been waiting for the last however long to just get to this gem because it is,
this is
too
one of the
good
greats.
To be true.
Yeah.
Jade Helm 15. Mm-hmm. If you're not aware what that is.
You probably aren't.
We're going to tell you. It's the best.
It's the best.
In July, the U.S. Army Special Operations Command is going to be doing a series of training exercises with other military units across Arizona, Texas, and basically like the entire
Southwest. The whole Southwest.
It's 8 weeks.
6 states.
And they're doing it there because the terrain is similar to that of the terrain in the Middle East. The Army has been doing training exercises
in
America
the Southwest.
And, you know, for hundreds of years.
For
all of time.
The only place they have to practice being the Army is their own territory.
Correct.
If you're practicing being the Army in foreign territory, you've actually invaded that territory.
Then you are being the Army.
Right,
at that point.
Exactly.
You're no longer practicing.
So, this is where the Army practices.
Right, exactly. So
the operation is called Jade Helm 15.
Which is weird.
A weird name.
Right.
And it's going to run for 8 weeks over the summer.
Right. Now,
this might sound like a simple concept to you. Like, oh, the Army's practicing things and whatever. Like, whatever. The Army does stuff like that.
That's
not how conservatives in the Southwest took this news.
It has turned into a giant conspiracy theory that is bubbling up all the way even into the Republican presidential primary
it's
right now.
It's gotten a lot of traction and it is insane.
Because Texas is now convinced that the Army is coming in
to declare martial law.
This
begins where Alex Jones on InfoWars,
a real conspiracy theory hero. Yep.
Said on Friday that it's way worse than we realize, and said military police working together towards population control was what this was about. Then this map starts circulating that's apparently the Army training document for the exercises, and divides the region into red states and blue states, with red states, Utah and Texas, labeled hostile, and blue states, California, Nevada, Colorado, labeled permissive.
Yes.
Everybody flipped their shit.
Yes.
And panicked. So then Louis Gohmert got nervous.
Oh, boy.
He got in on the action.
Yeah.
And says, when the federal government begins, even in practice games or exercises, to consider any U.S. city or state in hostile control and trying to retake it, the message becomes extremely calloused and suspicious.
Mm, my. So then Texas Governor Greg Abbott ordered the commander of the Texas State Guard to monitor the exercises. So he's called up
the National Guard, the Texas National Guard.
To watch the Army. The American Army.
This is our own army. Right.
Okay.
And it's an army, by the way, that has like major outposts in Texas. Like, Texas is a big army state.
Correct.
There's a lot of army already in Texas.
That's right.
They're all members of the army to begin with.
We could have had martial law in Texas.
Anytime.
Long ago.
Right. They didn't need to do this exercise to declare martial law in Texas.
No.
Fort Hood is in Texas.
Yes.
That's like the fort.
Yeah.
that's a big one.
Yeah. But there are a lot of conspiracy theories. Obviously,
there's the martial law one.
There's the martial law one.
Then based on some, like, weird cockamamie reading of some nonsense that's going on in the Middle East, some people are suggesting that we're preparing to wage a holy war along the southern Arizona border.
Interesting place to
have a holy war. We're going to be facing jihad on the southern Arizona border.
Oh, I see.
You know how Mexico can be, though.
I don't see, actually. No. I don't get that at all. No. I saw another one, too, where some guy who had, like, some radio show or something there was, like, trying to figure out what Jade Helm 15, and he was like, Jade, China. Helm at the helm, and was like, so there are
turned into like an Asia conspiracy.
There's this like whole brand of crazy that like thinks that like somehow China is taking over, but it's like, guys, this is the American
military.
Army. This is the American
military.
It's
our own military.
It's our own military.
They are us.
It's like they're confused
Texas has they're often confused. Been confused about that. They're Texas confused. Of any state has been the most confused yeah. about what does and does not constitute them.
Yeah.
For a long time. Anyway, it was not long before Ted Cruz got in on the action.
Yes.
Running for president. Had to say something, obviously, because he's from Texas.
That's right.
So he reached out to the Pentagon to, quote, inquire about Jade Helm 15.
Yes.
He said he had no reason to doubt their assurances, but then was at this event in South Carolina and basically told people that he understands why they're concerned.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the defense secretary, Ashton Carter, was asked by a reporter at a press conference on Thursday, is the U.S. military planning to overtake Texas, as is being asserted by some presidential candidates?
Yeah.
He said no.
That's it.
Surprise.
That's all you need. That's a one-word answer. It's in a word,
right.
No.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not it.
And even John McCain, who is, you know...
crazy nut conspiracy theory, who's from Southwest.
Right, exactly. He said, it's bizarre. We've been having military exercises in the Southwest for a couple hundred years.
When John McCain has to step in to be the voice of reason... You've really gone off track.
It's not great.
That's not great.
No.
Especially about a military operation.
Yeah. But, you know, this brings up, I mean, this is what is crazy about the Republican Party. Just in the people who think this are the people who are picking who is going to run for 2016.
Correct.
That's why Ted Cruz is having to say anything about mm-hmm. it. And this is their whole problem. I mean, this goes back to that sort of like, you know, the Jeb Bush adage of you've got to lose the primary
to win
the general election. And these people are nuts.
This is crazy.
This is too insane to even like give any credence to. And the fact that Republican presidential candidates are being asked about this, like at events that they are going to, is just too crazy to even fathom.
No, much too crazy. But
it's amazing.
It's amazing.
And the governor of the state is
The governor... Well, this is what I think is unique about Texas being in this situation as opposed to any other rational thinking state.
Right.
Texas has sort of long believed they are their own country.
Right.
There's always been a strong secession movement for Texas.
Rick Perry has talked about...
Yeah.
Seceding.
I mean,
yeah.
Any average Texan will talk your ear off about how Texas is its own country. Texans really are raised and like steeped in a culture that thinks that they are kind of like their own people.
Yeah.
And so for any other state, this would just be like business as usual.
Yeah.
Arizona probably wouldn't have paid much mind to this if it weren't next to Texas.
And Arizona has a crazy governor. Like he's caring about it. I'm sure Utah has a crazy governor too.
New Mexico is involved in this. They don't have a crazy governor, but I mean, New Mexico.
They have a Republican governor.
They have a Republican governor and they also have, it's a home for conspiracy theorists for sure. I mean, New Mexico is a crazy state for a lot of reasons, but one of them is because it's crazy desert people live in New Mexico. It's wacky over there.
Yeah.
But I mean, like this is all, I think, being driven by this sort of like culture in Texas of believing that they are independent of the rest of the U.S. And because of that, they sort of like are able to get away with, like, I cannot believe that the governor of one of the biggest states in the union, land-wise, I think, besides Alaska, isn't it the biggest state?
Yeah, it is.
I cannot believe that it would be acceptable for the governor to ask the National Guard of their own Texas National Guard to look in on the U.S. military doing a practice round in the desert over there.
Right?
I mean, oh my God.
The people who are in the military in his state should be furious about this.
Absolutely.
I don't know if they are.
And all of them. And it's the whole state is the military. Yeah. I mean, it's a big military state. It's crazy to me that their sort of like weird secessionist mentality has taken that kind of turn.
That's bizarre.
Because this is even something that, like, I can understand why certain states have, like, weird secessionist movements. I can understand why Norman Mailer ran for the mayor of New York and tried to convince everyone to secede. I can see why a state like California, which has the seventh largest economy in the world, would have a secession movement.
Right.
I can understand why all of this would be the case.
Yeah.
Texas is in the middle of the nation and has, like, most of the military in it. Like, of all the things, like... we don't have great reason to trust the American military, maybe on the coasts, in the same, you know, like, we're not military people over here. Texas is the military. Like, this is just, it's crazy to me. And this would never happen in another state, but, like,
no.
California may have a secession movement. This would never happen here.
No.
This is crazy. This is crazy.
It's so weird.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
Texas is crazy. Texas is a place I'll never fully understand.
Never change.
Never change Texas.
No.
No, I have long... I really haven't spent that much time in Texas, and I feel like maybe at some point I would like to just, like, do the tour.
I've never been.
I've only really been in passing trips. I've been, you know, I've been on several, like, one-night, you know, type trips to Texas. But I've never really, like, been to Texas. And all I know about Texas is I never feel like... I feel like any time that I've landed in Texas and had to, like, go somewhere from the airport, I've never found the city. Like, wherever you are in Texas, you're never in the center of wherever you are.
Interesting.
You're always somewhere else. Like, you never just feel like you've seen
the place you were intending to go.
You were intending to go. Like, you go to Dallas and you never see Dallas.
Right.
You just see what looks like the outskirts of L.A. forever.
Right.
And I mean the outskirts of L.A., a city that is the most sprawly city in America. So, like, that was really saying something. It's like a bigger kind of sprawl. Everything's big there. Everything really is bigger in Texas. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. They also are kind of loud in Texas.
Yeah.
But they have to shout across great distances to talk to each other. In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We will be back next week with news from our adventures at the State Democratic Convention.
Yeah.
So tune in for that for sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be some great 2016 stories next week,
too. There will have to be.
There would have to be.
Yeah. Maybe Hillary Clinton will have taken a question from the press.
Single solitary question.
Right, exactly. If the 3.6 days holds up, then she'll have taken...
She has one soon coming up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in any case, stay tuned for that. We will be back next week. Bye.
Bye.